Well, hello, dear listener, and welcome to episode 63 of Making Out Women in Film, a podcast where I sit down with women work across the film and TV industry to learn their story and hear all about their craft, career, and vigorous resilience. My name is Vita, and I am so excited to bring this week's episode, produced by Bonnie and Bra and Alice Films, to you. This week, I spoke with Dania Denise. She is an extraordinary filmmaker and the head of Runaway Mill Productions. We had an amazing conversation about leadership, on independent filmmaking, on teamwork, and listening to your gut, following your gut, finding your people. I hope this is educational for everyone listening and that you feel inspired at the end of the day. Now, if you stick around to the end, you'll also find our roundtable, which features me and our researcher Lauren. Our main topic of the day is the portrayal of masculinity in film and television. So I hope that you enjoy that. Let us know what you think. And without further ado, here's Dania.
I'm Dania Denise, and I like to say that I'm a Jill of all trades. I've been super fortunate to have skill sets in all kinds of different areas, especially in the entertainment industry, and knowing some business savvy, being an entrepreneur, and knowing what I want. So I just dive in with work. I work hard. I play hard. That's not true. I don't even know what a day off is. So I'm one of those crazy, just very driven people who is happiest when I'm working. That's just my jam.
You're a filmmaker, you're an actor, you're a leader, and we're going to talk all about that. But I want to first talk about your entry into filmmaking and what kind of set you on this course, because it is certainly something you have to be very determined to do, very determined. Do you have any, like, do you remember the first movie you ever saw?
I remember my first favorite movie. Well, The Little Mermaid to this day is my favorite movie of all time because it was the first one I remember seeing in the theater. My mom took me, and for it to be that particular film, mer people, underwater, the animation, I mean, just that's the stuff kids' dreams are made of. And I immediately fell in love with mermaids. I was like, they're real. You can't tell me differently. And just that fascination and wonder of diving into a completely different world was just so striking to me. And then as far as live action movies, I was a big Disney kid, so I really can't remember the first live action movie I saw, but I did grow up watching a lot of TV, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer was what I would come home after school and watch, and was just amazed and just loved everything about it. So I actually got into the industry as an actor and a model when I was 15. And this was way back in the day when there was no internet, really. There were no websites. There was no social media. It was a flyer in the mail that said, do you want to be an actor and a model? And I was like, yeah, I do. You know, bring a photo and show up at this place in San Francisco. And I just went to my parents and said, this looks fun. Can I try this? And they said, okay, we went and I submitted a photo and, you know, I got a call back and they said, okay, well, you have to pay for a few classes and then you get to audition in front of agencies. And that's what ended up really springboarding me into the industry. And funny enough, that company ended up going out of business because they were actually scamming people.
What?
They were charging really, really high rates for these classes and for the training. Now, the training was legitimate, but I think they were getting in trouble because of it was some legal stuff. But I got lucky because I got an agent out of it. There were a lot of people who just didn't, who probably, because they didn't really screen people. You know, if you're just charging people for their dreams, that's really easy. But in terms of actual talent and vetting people and looking at someone and saying, this is worth your investment versus someone where it's like, why would you mislead people, you know, if they really just might not have a realistic shot. So I'm pretty sure that's the illegal kind of shady business practices is why they went out of business. But I was a lucky one. I got an agent and I immediately just started working and the rest just kind of wrote itself. I've been in front of a camera basically my whole life. It's my second home. So
do you remember your first like time on set?
I do. My first job I ever booked was a photo shoot, and it was as a model for how to make your own greeting cards.
Right.
So we were using the product and being all cool. And I remember the book came out and I ran to the bookstore and I'm flipping through it and my picture did not make it in the book. and I wanted to cry. It was not okay. That was my first taste of stardom that didn't happen. But my first commercial that I booked after that, I was in it, and I was playing a church member for a church that I didn't go to, a religion that I was not affiliated with. So acting, right? And that on-set experience was a lot of fun. They had a bunch of different talent there because they were doing a montage type thing where we were saying the same line, but they had each person say a few words. So the final cut, it was all spliced together. So that was my first taste of being in front of a camera, doing a script, working with a director, and it just felt natural. I felt at home, and that's always been that way. And I'm so happy that that was the case for me.
Amazing, amazing. What was it like seeing yourself like on that commercial then? Like, you know, knowing that the last time you didn't make it.
It was surreal, but I was thinking to myself, like, I could get used to this. It's weird, but I like this. And I think I did a good job. You know, I didn't suck. So let's just keep going. And my parents were like, okay, this is nice to actually see the fruit of the laborers and the money that they invested up front. It was actually happening. And that honestly made me feel great because I knew my parents spent a lot of money. And I felt a bit of guilt at the time because I said, if I don't get famous, if I don't make a lot of money, you know, my parents work really hard and they're investing in me. And to be 15 and to have those thoughts, it is what it is. But I really wanted to show my parents that they made a good choice and that I was worth the investment. And they knew it. But for me, I was like, I hope you don't think you just wasted this money. I'm actually booking things. And look, I'm in this commercial. So everybody was happy. It was a win-win.
Yeah. No, that is definitely tricky. And I'm sure you did feel like a lot of pressure there. Where did acting come in then? Like going from modeling to acting, was that something that you were kind of always interested in? Or was it a natural connection?
Yeah, I grew up imitating people and just, you know, mimicking voices and accents. And I was always a dramatic kid, not in the sense of I caused drama, but there was just always something about my personality, very outgoing. I love to tell stories, make my friends laugh. It was just being a conversationalist was natural to me. And I didn't get nervous in front of groups. I was really great with public speaking. I love to memorize things. In elementary school, I used to memorize one or two poems every week for the poetry showcase. So early on, those skills were instilled in me. My dad was a huge reader. I grew up reading his novels. And so the vocabulary and just my love of stories and storytelling, I think probably started there because I was reading these books that honestly, I probably shouldn't have been reading because they were grown-up books. But I loved, you know, mystery and crime and intrigue and all that stuff was great. And I did a little bit of theater, but I wasn't a theater kid. I didn't grow up in the theater, but it was a lot of fun to experiment and be on stage and learn scripts in that way. So once I started doing the acting and modeling, it just came naturally to me. And I didn't have a coach. I didn't go to a school. I literally learned hands-on with every project that I booked and started to really have a great appreciation for what it took to be an actor. And I knew I was good at it. And I think when you have that self-confidence to say, hey, I know I'm pretty good at this. And that makes me more excited to do even more projects. So it was always there. It just really took me getting into the industry and getting an agent and working professionally to understand that I have a skill set. This is a good match for it. And I want to see how far I can go with it.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, having that internal belief in yourself is very important. How was like your external support system? Because I think that's one of the reasons so many people kind of drop off when they're beginning is because they don't have that.
Yeah, my mom was definitely the cheerleader for sure. My dad was a realist. So I think for him, he said, you know, whatever makes my daughter happy makes me happy. But not a lot of parents are enthused when their kids say, Mom, Dad, I want to be an actor. That's terrifying to most parents. And I think my dad basically said, maintain your grades and you can do this as long as you want, but don't lose focus. You're going to college. You're going to get a real job. You know, this is for fun. So he didn't discourage me, but I knew that his expectations were different. For my mom, moms are just excited about that stuff. Look at my child. Look what I made. Look what she can do. So she was definitely the cheerleader there. But whatever projects I did, my dad was always happy about it. But I think for him, he was nervous. He didn't want me to get my hopes up high. He didn't want me to get discouraged or get hurt. And we had a rocky moment in our father-daughter relationship as I got older, because I think he saw this wasn't a phase for me. It was something I was sticking with. And I think he was worried that I'd be one of those people who would just throw everything at it and not get anything in return and just be completely broken. So luckily, he ended up coming back around and became my biggest advocate. But early on, I did have the support of both of my parents. My friend group in school, because I'm an only child, my friend group, they knew that I was doing this. And I was very lucky that I didn't have any backlash. I didn't really have anybody who said, you know, I don't know why you're doing that. You're not special. People were excited. They were like, that's my best friend on TV, or look at my friend. So I coach and I mentor other actors and models, and I've heard their stories. And I know, exactly like you said earlier, a lot of people do not get that support. And it's just probably the biggest obstacle, I think, more so than trying to be successful, is just feeling like people are championing you and that they believe in you as much as you believe in yourself. So I count my blessings every day that I've had this great tribe of people from day one who just said, that's awesome. We support you, like we brag about you, do your thing. So I think that definitely helped me not look back and not doubt myself as much as I think I probably would have if I was just on my own with everything.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that. Coaching people, that sounds great. Like, how, do you remember your first, like, you said you took those training classes. Do you remember what that was like? Because obviously that was kind of probably a first impression of becoming a professional.
Yeah, it actually worked out where we were focusing on commercials, because that's the big thing. So it wasn't really a focus on, you know, film, so to speak. It's like, be cheesy and learn how to slate your name, and this is how you do it. And my instructor actually was a commercial actor, and he'd gotten a few national commercials. But he's one of those actors where you wouldn't know his name, but you would recognize his face. And so we were in a group, and you know, one by one, you've got to get in front of the camera. And I remember him saying, pretend that the camera is someone you know, your best friend, because you want to be conversational. You don't want to be stiff, or you know, you want to definitely not be afraid to show your expressions. So that's the first thing I thought of, was talking to the camera like it's your friend. And then, you know, doing profiles and slating your name, and then doing these commercials. I remember it was a Neutrogena commercial that I had memorized, and I was, you know, never used Neutrogena at the time. I was like, whatever, I guess it's shampoo. And it was a bit of a blur, but it was fun. It was fun to see the other people, you know, do their thing. And some people were good, some were, they had to work at it a little bit more, but we were all just excited to be there and to be learning from this person who was giving us these stories about his time on set and the kind of stuff that they experience. So yeah, the commercial world's a big happy one, and that's what they led with, and I was happy for that.
But eventually, you also kind of wanted to move on to something more than that. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think majority of actors would say that my dream is not to just be a commercial actor. I want to dig into the really good roles in a drama, or be silly in a comedy, or be romanced in a rom-com. I think a lot of actors, they dream to see themselves on the big screen. And it's so funny because I love commercials. I do both, but commercials are fun. It's a nice break. And actually, to me, doing commercial work is a really great hands-on experience for a quick character study. Because you don't have a backstory, you don't have months to work on a project, you just have to know how to embody this particular character or caricature, and then you live it and then you're done. And there are some people, even on short films when I'm directing, where I'm going, we don't have 3 months to shoot this short film. I need you to get it quickly. And I think actors who are comfortable doing commercial work, those skill sets bleed over into the theatrical world with film and television in a way that I think a lot of actors don't realize. So I'm a big advocate for knowing all of those worlds. Don't just focus on being dramatic, because then what if you get cast in something that's completely opposite and you don't get your true potential, you don't get your shot, you know, because you just weren't ready. You always have to be ready.
Yes. Gotta adapt, gotta adapt. What's your favorite role that you've played?
Oh, I actually, it's an interesting answer because it is a role that I played in a film trailer for my first feature film that I have yet to, I'm in early pre-production for it. The film trailer gave me a glimpse into being this character. It's for my feature called You Were Just Here. And it's a family drama, and it's a love letter to my dad. I lost him to cancer in 2019, and hands down, the most traumatic thing that's ever happened in my life so far. And the movie is loosely based on my relationship with him. A lot of stuff that happens in the film actually happened in real life, but then a bigger chunk of it is, you know, creative license for story and things like that. But when I decided to do the film trailer first as a proof of concept to go with the screenplay that I wanted to put together into a pitch deck to pitch the feature, I originally didn't plan to even be the actor. I thought, okay, I'll direct it and I'll have an actor. And then my creative partner, who was my DP for the project, said, you know, you could just play it. It's a film trailer. We're not shooting the whole thing. You can act. It's your story. It's you. Why don't you just do it? And I say, oh, okay, that's convenient. Let's just do that. And then through that process, we shot for about 4 days, and I realized how close this role was to me, and that I really wanted to do it justice even more so because of the bigger picture of the story that I wanted to tell. So I got a glimpse of being that character, Vanessa, and I can't wait to reprise that role in the full feature because it is going to be such a challenge for me as an actor to not only embody this character who I very much identify with, but in a lot of ways, I created aspects of her that aren't part of me. And it's like, how do I stay in actor mode? But I'm getting triggered because it's dealing with my dad and loss. And as a director, how am I going to stay in those lanes properly? But it's not in a way where I'm doubting myself that I can't do it. I'm excited. I'm ready for that challenge. So far that's actually been my favorite role, and I can't wait because I get another chance to be her again in a much bigger aspect.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like, from what I've seen, something that's fully fueled by love and passion.
I think that's how you should do everything in life, especially filmmaking.
100%. Yeah. Filmmaking, when did that come into play?
I would say it was about 2017, 2018-ish. I have a great network of fellow friends that are actors, and they're always working on things. And, you know, from time to time, we'll ask each other to be on our projects. And, oh, I thought of this opportunity. Would you be interested in this character? And so one of those friends had invited me to be part of a web series that he had written and was directing. And it was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, it didn't really get off the ground, but that experience allowed me to connect with a couple of other people who said, hey, let's do some indie filmmaking. And prior to that, I hadn't really been behind the camera. I'd done some video editing in school, but that was new to me. So I said, okay, cool. I'll be, you know, actor, producer. I like to organize things so that I kind of was in charge of just putting things together and schedules and making sure everybody was on track. That just comes naturally to me. And I remember it was me and two other guys that were really working together to write these stories and shoot them with an iPhone and local DPs who had, you know, cameras, digital SLRs, and we were just having a great time telling these stories and realizing that we had a knack for filmmaking. And one day we all looked at each other and said, did we just become a production company? Yep. Like it was just, you know, there was no contracts, nothing legal. We just said, hey, let's just do this and let's call it something and start posting and sharing these videos. And it was through that I got the hands-on training of how, because I've been on sets my whole life, but when you're in front of the camera, your mind is elsewhere, your priorities are elsewhere. And so being able to be behind the camera and observe and go, oh, okay, that's how these settings work, and this is what these terms mean, and this equipment, I see it all the time, but this is what it's actually called. And I love to learn. So it was great to actually learn how to operate sound and a boom mic and start getting back into editing again, and I fell in love with editing. Oh my gosh, I have been in projects where the performances were great, but the edit was just, it just didn't work. You can edit something to make someone look like they can't act. And it terrifies me to this day when I do certain projects as an actor, because you don't know what that final project is going to look like. So I said, oh man, I know how to edit now. It's like being God. I can
Yes,
make sure it's the way it's
so much
supposed to
power.
be. So much power. So I just completely fell in love with being behind the camera. And the more we worked on projects and the more lessons we learned, I started to realize that this was something I knew I needed to pursue just as hard as I was pursuing my acting career. So that I got a taste of it, and I was drunk off of that.
And where did you go from there? How was it to, because obviously, yeah, you'd been doing jobs, you'd in the industry, you'd been booking roles and things like that, but that's a whole different avenue. And I'm sure there was also kind of like a bit of a step to cross.
Exactly. Yeah, everything happened the way it was supposed to. I helped to co-found two different production companies, indie ones, just very small in-house, similar circle of colleagues. And, what I was realizing is that people operate differently. I know I want to do this for a living. I want to eat, sleep, and breathe it. I'm okay putting in the hours. I'm okay going off of little to no sleep. And there are other people who just want to have fun and make movies to show their friends. Or they have families, they have day jobs, and they're just not in a position to really go at it in the same way that I'm able to. And I understand that. And so it was really frustrating to start something, start a company with people, and have people slowly drop off or not pull their weight. And it was affecting the quality of the project, which was making me so mad because the last thing you want to do, this is something visually you're showing people. That is your reputation, regardless of whether you're just starting out or you've been doing it for 50 years. And I never want to put out anything that I'm embarrassed by or that I wouldn't want to show to people. And I felt like that the quality was being compromised and sacrificed because they weren't showing up for doing what they were supposed to do, or only doing the bare minimum, which I can't stand. So I, in the back of my mind, said, you know what? I would love to have like my own little production company. Maybe I could do something on my own, or like a subdivision type of like an offshoot of this production company. So that was always in the back of my mind. And the last indie production company that I helped co-found was with my now ex, but when the relationship didn't work anymore, clearly that affects the business. But
Yes.
thankfully, it was amicable. I said, this is definitely a sign that I need to do my own operation and I'll be fine. I've learned so much. So everything happened the way it was supposed to. I took all those experiences and it helped me learn what I wanted my production company to look like and how I wanted it to operate and who I would work with and how I would work with those people. And that's how I knew I'm not gonna have co-founders and partners that are going to be, it's going to be me. And I will partner with people and put teams together. But as far as founders, owners, it's just one person. That way, I really have the autonomy to make certain judgment calls, still work collaboratively, but not have to worry about anybody jumping ship or bailing or just not pulling their weight because it's all on me and I'm okay with that. I'll bank on myself any day of the week. So that's what really gave me the momentum to say, you can do it. People know. It's almost like people have been waiting for me to do something where it was my own company because I love working with people and I have a great reputation for being reliable, being dependable, being fun, getting things done in an industry that's known for flakes, right? For people who talk a lot, but they don't do enough. And I had to put my money where my mouth was, and I knew that my production company was gonna get me that leverage and show people, you thought I could do stuff before. Look what happens when you put me in charge of a company. Look what happens when you give me a budget. Like, and
Yes.
that's not ego. That's me knowing my worth and what I can contribute, and because I want to do it and I want to do it for the right reasons. So,
Yes.
balls to the
Yes.
wall.
I I love all of this so much because it's I also just really relate to it. It is a struggle sometimes when you begin and, you know, you're wanting to do it with all these different people, and then sometimes you just see that not everyone is in the same mindset as you, and it's completely fine, but it does make it difficult for you, who is very steadfast, you know. So I respect you so much. Something I myself struggle with, though, is that I'm very stubborn. I'm very much a perfectionist. Mm. I would rather do everything and know that it's done the way I want it than get help sometimes. How do you find it to delegate? Is that going for you?
That is definitely something we have in common. I think what helped me is I sat down and I went, what do I like doing and what do I just don't want to do? And also what am I interested in that I can learn and actually be proficient in versus what I just don't have the bandwidth to actually accommodate and be proficient. So once I broke it down into that, that helped me. And also it helped that I knew enough professionals, thankfully, who actually I trusted with their skill set, with their work ethic, their energy that they brought to set. So once I kind of had that camaraderie going and that trust was there, I said, okay, I feel like you get me and I can delegate this to you and see what you do with it. And it actually frees me up to be a tyrant in the other stuff that I love to just tackle. So it's actually doing me a favor that I'm delegating. It is hard sometimes, especially I try to be fair because, again, people have lives, people have kids and obligations. I don't have children. I have two cats. Like my obligations to things are very, very minimal. I don't have a lot of strings. And I have to sometimes stop myself, especially in post-production, when you want it to be done and you're going, okay, why is this not done yet? If I knew how to do it, I would have it done. I wish I could do it so I could just have it done. And I have to just slow my roll and go, things come up in your life too. And sometimes you have to prioritize. And when they do come through, it's with flying colors. So it's like, it's fine. It's fine. I say that so much. It's fine. I end up believing it at a certain point. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's trust, you know, like it's really about trust, and it's difficult, especially I think creatively, because like if it was, I don't know, I want to say if it was something more boring, I probably wouldn't feel that way, but I'm not so sure. But there is something about, you know, something that's so close to you, something that you really feel, you know, yeah. You feel very protective over and very particular about. And trust is amazing. Everybody needs it. Everybody needs to find a team.
Oh, 100%. I think, you know, your project is only as strong as the team you put on it. And one thing that's actually worked in my favor being an actor and being on sets is I love to network. I have business cards. This was before I was even a filmmaker. I had business cards just for acting and modeling and stuff like that because I always want to be working. And people don't know who you are until you put yourself on their radar. And whenever I'm on set and I can tell who I gravitate towards, their mannerisms, how open they are, if they're guarded, if they're kind of aloof, if they're shy. And I, you know, will always make friends on set, whether it's the other actors, the crew. I will always talk to the crew. Sometimes actors will, you know, sort of separate themselves, and I get that, but I'm talking to the grip gaff, you know, I'm talking to the PA and I'm hanging out with the sound guy and asking him a bunch of questions. So from that, every time I'm on set, I try to find at least one person that I walk away with as a new contact. I am giving business cards. I'll ask for business cards. I don't give my business cards to everybody though. I do it very discreetly because, and it sounds horrible, there are some people who you know you will probably not work well with, or their energy is not really meshing with yours or their personality. But
I mean, you're saving yourself and them for something bad, you know, like that's right, just how it is.
Right. So I'll, you know, have conversations with different people, and depending on how I receive them and how their energy is, and if I feel like they're genuine and they have pretty much the same vision or the same drive, then I'll, you know, afterwards be like, hey, it was so great to work with you. And, you know, I actually I would love to exchange information, like, here's my card, or do you have a business card, or nowadays, what's your handle? Which I just, whatever. But, it's the times we live in. It's fine. But a business card, I think, is always a must, no matter what. And I can't tell you how many times I've given someone a business card and they're like, oh, I don't have any business cards. I need to get business cards. Or, oh, I never think to bring my business cards. And so I kind of also help them maybe be a better business person because of it. So I'm always recruiting people that I think could be part of the tribe. It's also my way to vet them. Because if it's an actor and I'm seeing how they perform, and you can tell if somebody's, naturally gifted at it versus someone who's probably still working at it, or maybe you're just like, you're cool, but I don't think you'd be a match for my projects. So it's a great way to basically see a sneak peek into how they operate. Same thing with the crew. So that does a lot of the legwork on its own. Then once I've established those connections, once I put my teams together, I'm really good about setting my expectations in a way that is not threatening, in a way that's not bitchy, in a way that's not micromanaging, because I truly come at it from a place of curiosity and respect. And I always tell people as an actor, my job is to make your job easier. I'm going to show up and know my lines. I'm going to show up and be easy to direct and easy to coach. And I feel the same way when it comes to being a director. If you make your DP's job, if you make your PA's job, your sound mixer's job, your music composer's job, if you make their job easy, they recognize that. It doesn't take much, and they will bend over backwards because they know you'll do the same. And I will come to my DPs if it's my first time working with them in a director capacity, or if it's the first time working together in general. And I give the same spiel, but I'm genuine about it. It's not like I'm just recycling, but I say, I'm still new in a lot of chapters of my directing career, but I'm not a stranger to this world. However, I want to know why you're doing what you're doing, not because I'm trying to micromanage, but because I want to understand your language. It's going to be easier for me if I'm on set and there's a delay happening and I'm trying to figure out why, and you'd say XYZ, and because you've educated me on what that means and what it takes to get this shot, I'm not going to be upset or frustrated. I'm going to go, oh, that makes perfect sense. Carry on. So I want to learn as much as I can and understand what makes their job difficult, what makes their job easy, and what I can do to make them comfortable. And even having that conversation, I think they're clearly not used to it because people are so receptive to that, where they're like, damn, she actually cares about me. It's not just, okay, I need to do a job and don't mess it up and, be perfect. It's like, no, you're a human being. You have a talent that I did not take time to curate. So I want to cultivate that. I want them to be at their best. I want them to love what they're doing when they're on my set. So that helps build that trust and a friendship. And then it ends up not being awkward when you do need to talk business and handle certain things, because you've already kind of established that, hey, I'm in charge of this stuff, but I need you. I'm not, I don't work, you don't work for me, you work with me. So it's the mentality of how you talk to people. And I think that's hard for some people, especially directors, maybe from years past. They've got the power trip and the ego, and they lead with that. They lead with power. They lead with fear and intimidation and name dropping. I don't care about any of that. I care about what you're doing right now in this moment and what you're bringing to my set. And if it's toxic, if it's off-putting, if it's bad energy, if I just look at you and I viscerally react to you, I don't care if you have an Oscar. I don't want to work with you, because that's going to bleed throughout the whole tribe and everybody is going to be in their feelings about it. And then people are going to break off and start talking mess about the person they don't like. I don't want that on my set. So I'm always investing time in my people to make sure that they feel like they're being heard and that we can collaborate and problem solve. Don't tell me that I just can't do something. Identify what the issue is. Let's talk about our options and then let's do it. I don't want to sit here and argue and bicker back and forth about who's right or who's wrong. How do we fix it? Because we're burning time. I got things to do.
No, exactly. And I do think, like, it's kind of like what you were saying earlier about, like, some people you don't give the business cards to, and it's okay because they might be super talented. But if you're not on the same wavelength, the project isn't going to be good. the result isn't going to be good if you can't be open with each other about it. And it is something that I think for a lot of creatives can be really hard, is to be open to feedback. And it's a learning curve. It really is. It's something that you have to slowly open yourself up to.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It is terrifying to put yourself out there and get feedback. But yeah, it's the takeaways that ultimately, like you said, it makes you stronger. It makes you more aware, and it makes your projects moving forward that much better.
Yeah. And I do think, especially like, there's a lot of competition in this industry. There's a lot of, so very few make it, and if I'm going to, you can't. That's kind of a lot of the mentality, is that, you know, you have to be the one to do it. And it is very easy to, you know, become a loner that way, to not bond with people in the same field or with people with, you know, different strengths, because you're so hyper-focused on, I am going to be the one who makes it. But when it comes to independent filmmaking, you cannot have that. Like, that is not going to be good for anyone. Competition is what, like, is keeping it down, is what's, you know, keeping it from growing to its biggest potential. There's no room for that. There can't be. You have to let go of that fear of like falling behind, and lean into collaboration instead. I know that's something you're quite passionate about, is moving beyond competition.
Oh, for sure. I wholeheartedly believe, and I say this like a broken record, and I have no problem with it, it is, everyone succeeds faster when we do it together. It takes actually a lot longer and so much more energy when you're pushing people down to try to get to the top. And then when you get to the top, they say it's lonely at the top. Well, yeah, because you burned every bridge that you crossed. Of course you're not going to enjoy it. You're going to be lonely. You're going to feel so disconnected from other people, and you're going to not even really enjoy the work that you set out to do in the first place. And I am all about tribe building and encouraging people and passing on opportunities to people. If I'm too busy, I'm not going to just be like, I don't know anybody. No, I know probably three other people, and hopefully it works out. I want those people to have those opportunities. Competition is one of the biggest, I think, it's just one of the stupidest aspects of the industry because of how cutthroat people make it out to be. I don't know why it has to be negative. It doesn't. The feedback actually I've gotten from people recently when they asked me about my experiences in this industry, and they said, you know, well, I know people who, they tell me horror stories, and there's just all this sabotage and, you know, the sexual stuff and the scams and the shady characters, and you don't ever have any of those stories. And I said, well, yeah, because it's about your environment and what you will and will not tolerate and the people you keep around you. I'm not in LA. I'm in Northern California. It is a completely different world. And of course, everyone, you know, thinks of Hollywood. That's where you go to make your dreams come true. And all due respect to Hollywood and its history, it definitely obviously put film on the map in general. But you don't have to be in Hollywood to have Hollywood where you are. And I love that. And I don't make it a point to go down to LA to work. Will I take on projects there? Sure. But I wasn't one of those actors who the dream was to move to LA. There was work up here for me. I had no problem with that. I know that the opportunities are different and the networks are different, so I'm not naive. But I have had the positive experiences that I've had. I have the tribe and the film family and the community that I have because I focused on fostering the talent up here. And there are so many amazing people and locations right in our own backyard. So I have been fortunate that I haven't had really many horror stories or things about competition where it put me off to maybe like question what I was doing in this industry. And it sucks that there are people out there that are dealing with that, but it's like, if you don't like the situation, you can change it. And if the industry is not working for you, bend it to your will and do it your way. And that's what I've been doing. And that's why I love indie filmmaking, because it's gritty. It's you're in the trenches. You're doing everything yourself, bootstraps. Everyone is there for the right reasons, because they care about the story. They want to put in their effort and showcase something that everyone can be proud of. And that's a different dynamic. And that's a type of environment where it's not about competition, it is about collaboration. And it's real quick to see who is a team player and who isn't. I have no problem not burning bridges, because I'm not gonna do the burning. Some people do that themselves. And I just sit on the other side and go, okay, well, that sucks, but I'm building bridges over here. So this is where I'll be. You know, there are some people that are going to get left behind because they are their own worst enemy, because they still subscribe to that competition mentality where, like you said, they can't be trusting, they can't be vulnerable, they can't understand that there actually are people and creatives out here who aren't trying to get over on them. And that's a lot of work that they have to do on themselves. I don't have time for it. It's not my job to make someone care about a project. If you are down, you will show up, you will show out, and you will do what you need to do, and it'll be great. And if you don't, you drop the ball, you get left behind. It's as simple as that. And the people who are left standing with you at the end of the day, those are the real ones. And those are the ones that I keep coming back to over and over with projects, because I'm obsessed with my cast and my crew that I work with. I always want them around me. And that's such a wonderful feeling, as opposed to working with people where you're like, I hope I never see that person again. Or if I see their name on a call sheet, oh, I don't even know if I want to be on this project. I would hate to feel that way. And I work as hard as I do and foster the relationships that I do so that I don't ever have to worry about that. So competition, I don't buy it. I don't.
No, and you know, it's shocking how good a healthy work environment can be to foster creativity. And you know, like, I mean, my God, why? You know, sometimes you do hear stories about people on set, and you're like, it didn't have to be that way. And
exactly,
like, why did you ever think that yelling at people, abusing people, was the way to go? Like, how is it such a foreign thought that, like, to just be nice to people and to work with people? Like, why is it so difficult for so many people? It blows my mind, because, you know, you look at, like, pretty much all of the classic cinema movies and those stories are behind them, and you're just like, that was one person who got the result that they wanted, but it did not need to be that way.
No, it's not rocket science. It really isn't.
No. surprisingly, madness. Filmmaking is something that requires so many different niches and different specialties. Mm-hmm. That building the right team is essential. And I do think, like, because I was talking about, you know, trusting is difficult. You know, being a leader is difficult. But every time I have opened myself up to working with other people, to hearing them, something happens in the room, you know? Like, you can feel it, like, pulsing through your body. There's something there that really ignites when you are talking with people on the same wavelength, with the same passions, that completely transforms the way you looked at it. And it's inspiring. It just is. It's what fuels it. It's what keeps on doing it. Even if you're feeling down, if you're suddenly not, you know, in touch with it, talking with the people who still are can ignite that again for you.
Couldn't have said it better myself. 100%. 100%. And that's why I geek out about this stuff so much, because that feeling, you don't really get that anywhere else, not in that same type of environment. And it is just enthralling. It's like a drug, you know?
It really is. Talking about that, I want to ask you about a movie or a show, because I'm lumping the two in together now, because, like, what is the line? What is television anymore? What is movies? Like, it's all one. I think so. Like, the amount of time I've used the word cinematic to describe a television show,
right?
I feel like it can kind of go into the same realm, you know? So I'm just going to say a movie or a show that inspired you.
The Handmaid's Tale. That show has me at a loss for words in so many ways. I appreciate it as an actor for the performances. I appreciate it. I don't do cinematography, but I appreciate cinematography because of that show. I love to study the camera movements and go, oh my gosh, That rack focus they just did gave me chills. What kind of TV shows do that to people? I study everything, and it's one of the few shows that I can watch as a regular person and also as a filmmaker and not feel like I have to, the lines get so blurred. So I don't feel like I miss out, because
Feel.
it can kind of suck when you know how to watch a movie and you're like, ah, oh, I can't focus on it because that pan was really weird, or like, I don't like the swimming cam on that shot. But I get lost in that world. I'm the type of person, I love to have my emotions just rocked with whatever I'm watching. There's some people who are skeptical when they watch things and they're like, I'm made of stone. I don't have feelings. I just watch it, whatever. I'm the person, I'm crying, because that's what I want to do with my films and with the roles that I play. I want to feel, I want people to be moved. I want them to identify with the character they may not have ever identified with before. That's powerful. And I feel like The Handmaid's Tale, from the writing, in all aspects, it's a 10 across the board for what I think it takes to be powerful with storytelling. And I just, oof, that show gets me every time. I binge it. I binge, I kid you not.
That is impressive. It is
I
not a
binge
very bingeable
I binge
show,
a
but
season. I did it in one day, one time, because I was just like, clear the calendar. This is film school for me. I gotta get my
This is
time
it.
in.
Oh, that's I love justifying
I
it like
am.
that. I'm
Yeah,
studying it, and I
exactly. This is
am,
work, okay? That's my story and I'm sticking to it. Yes.
Research,
Absolutely.
yes. Now, another like little bit different side. A movie or show that's your guilty pleasure, something that you know maybe isn't the best quality, but you love it anyway.
I love Bravo reality shows. I love them. I watch almost all of, not all of them, but I do watch some of the Housewife shows. I love Below Deck. I love Below Deck Mediterranean. I love Vanderpump Rules. This is my opportunity to literally let my mind go numb and just enjoy dumb entertainment. I'm sorry, that's all it is. I don't have to think. And honestly, I feel like those reality shows are social experiments happening right before your eyes. Because how many times have we seen a relationship play out or a communication get so misconstrued? And it's actually a takeaway for real life, where you're like, oh, this is like that one's, oh yeah, there's a lot of different decisions I could make and how to respond to this situation. Like, it's a character study. Sorry, it is. And it's just fun. It is just fun. Those are my soap
It
operas. Those are my stories. I tell my partner, I say, I'm watching my stories. And he's like, you're what? It's my reality shows. He goes, are you saying they're like, so yes, they are like soap operas. They're the new soap operas. Learn it, live it, love it. Sorry. Don't talk to me till the commercial comes on.
You said it. You said it. And now, what about a movie or show that you would love, give anything to experience again for the first time?
Dexter.
Ooh.
Dexter. I came across that show on accident. I hadn't, really heard about it. It's like whatever. I was living with my boyfriend at the time and our roommate, and we just used to love to just watch different shows. And so we're like, all right, let's check out this Dexter thing. He's like a serial killer, but he kills bad people. Like, that's intriguing. First episode, we're literally just, this is awesome. And we binged it. We didn't finish the first season, but I kid you not, we blinked and it was like 5 in the morning, because we could not. It was like anything I'd ever seen before. The characters, the premise, the performances. I'm macabre. I like dark stuff. I'm happy and goofy, but I love dark stuff. And I'm fascinated by the human mind and the human psyche, and I love all that stuff, and they just blended it together so beautifully. And I was floored. I think that was probably the first episodic drama or episodic type of show that I really was addicted to. I had to watch it. I got so invested in the characters, and man, there's not another Dexter. There's not.
Amazing. I do like, oh my god, I began watching it at the beginning of the year. It's the first new show, well, not new show, but like show I hadn't seen before that I watched this year. I'm pretty sure I saw all seasons in 1 month.
Nice.
Yeah, even New Blood. I saw New Blood in 1 day. Like I just binged through it, all of it. I just
I
could
love
not
it.
stop. It was just on.
Love it.
Even the bad parts, I was like, it's fine. I'm with these characters
Yeah,
now,
exactly. You just
I've been here for
appreciate it. It's
hours,
okay. It's okay. We're
I've been
seeing
through a
this through.
lifetime with
That's
these.
commitment.
Yes, exactly. Okay,
Yep.
so now we did,
Yep.
I think these were all shows. So a movie. I do want a movie recommendation from you to our listeners. Not a movie you think everybody should watch, because I don't think there is such a movie, but rather one that you love so much. I know it's sometimes difficult to pick a favorite movie. I struggle constantly.
Yeah.
But if there is a movie that goes into your head right now, what is it?
Okay, if I have to pick one,
I know. I
damn
know.
it. 'Cause I have two, but if I have to pick one, I get it. I get it. Beyond the Lights.
Oh.
That's a film that I didn't watch it in the theaters or anything. I just saw it on demand or whatnot. And I didn't go into it with any expectations. I was just kind of like, meh, this looks cool, whatever. And I think that helped me
Yeah.
because how often do we get so much hype and the promos and to the point where either we really want to watch it or you're like, you know what, I'll watch it 5 years from now because you're not going to sit here and tell me that I have to watch this because my expectations are here. They're never going to be met. But with that movie, one, it was so well done, I felt. It's actually a movie that if I was the director, I would have done the exact same thing that she did. I was like, oh my gosh, I totally would have shot it like that. Or oh, that the editing and the performance and the story, it's a story I would have told. And I just felt like the director, Gina Prince Bythewood, I felt like she just did all the right things. And you can always tell a great director in so many ways without seeing them actually direct. You know, it's in the final product from the actors. There was just a comfort level with their performance and their chemistry. It's a beautiful movie. It's the cinematography is just gorgeous. I don't know, it just stays in my heart for some reason. And actually, when I was reading up about it, because I nerd out once I like something, I just start researching like a crazy person. She actually fought to have the lead, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, be in that because she wrote, Gina Prince Bythewood wrote and directed the film. And so she cast her and she started to shop the film around to the studios. And the studios said, well, we love the movie, but replace her. We want a different actress. We want someone bigger. And she said, no. And she actually turned down the studios and said, I refuse to replace her. This role is for her. And she ended up getting it funded. She ended up working, I think it was, through like BET or some affiliate of theirs that she got the funding through them and she got it made. And I went, that is some boss babe stuff. Like that is
That
something
is
I would do. I
amazing.
love
Such
that she
guts.
did that and it worked. Such guts, right? Because sometimes those decisions don't work out, but they do. They can. And I get really sick of the formulaic studio philosophy of how they greenlight certain projects. I'm like, you can't tell me you're going to tell her to replace Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who is a great actress and I think very underrated as an actress, but you're going to make all these garbage things that just will never ever stand up. You like, who is in charge? Change it.
Truly, sometimes it
Change
does
it.
feel like a simulation. I'm like, was this written by
Just stop
anyone?
it.
Was it computer generated? What happened? And why?
This got money. They got money. I'm sitting here with my little indie self and you guys just threw like $25 million at this bucket of garbage. Get out of here. You could have built a school. Like you could have done so much stuff with that money. I'm so mad at you right now. Like I can't. That's also why I love indie because yes, we do want the funding, but I feel like the journey to get people to believe in your project, it's more organic and more authentic than I think the rigmarole that comes with dealing with studios. There's so many hoops to jump through. And it's like, I'm sorry. I'm already doing enough as it is,
Yeah,
I can't.
no, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, my favorite thing about indie movies is that the story always comes first. The story is the reason people are doing this. It is
Yes.
about that. It is not
Yes.
about the millions, because it's always in the millions dollar, you know, budget. It is not about the Netflix deal. It is about the story. And people are pushing through hell to make it, but they believe in it and they're going to do it.
Yes. Yep.
That's what I love. And that and you
Compel or high
see it. You
water.
see it. You see the bloodshed that went into some of these movies. You really do all the sacrifices, so much of it, which adds so much emotion to the movies, I think, because it comes through. It really does. There's something you can tell. You can tell when people care about the project. You can tell when people have put their soul into it. You really can.
And the audience appreciates that, you know, it shows that you care about the audience enough that you want to really give them something. Every project you're giving yourself. And we never take that lightly. So, yeah.
Now, 15-year-old yourself, you know, you when you were 15 and you just signed on, you'd gotten the call back from the modeling agency. If she could see you now, if she could peek into the future, how do you think she would feel?
She'd have to sit down and she'd do a slow clap. She'd have to do a slow clap because the trials and tribulations it takes to get to anywhere in life is always tumultuous at best. And you don't realize how strong you are until you have sported the scars from those battles that you fought and won. Nothing comes easy, and I don't expect it to. And I think she would be really proud that I didn't get deterred, that I didn't throw the towel in, and that I continued to take that same belief that I had back then in myself and what I can do. And that just grew stronger. It never weakened, it never faltered, because I knew that I was meant to follow the path less traveled. I was not put on this earth to be ordinary and to just be in a 9-to-5, not knocking people in 9-to-5s. Y'all are great. You make the world go round. But I'm supposed to take the hard path for a reason because I can withstand it and it's okay and it's worth it. So she would definitely do the slow clap and be like, job well done. Like, that's great.
Oh, I love it. I think, you know, it's easy to be hard on yourself. It's easy to underestimate, underappreciate what you're doing. But if you see yourself from years ago, do that. Just think about who you're doing this for. You're doing it for that girl who had all these dreams. And now you're living them, and it's hard, but you're doing it, and that's why. Inspiration is really important. And so finally, I'm gonna let you give a shout out to a woman in the industry who inspires you.
I spoke about her, Gina Prince Bythewood. The more I learn about her, the more impressed I am. She has directed so many wonderful films. She writes her own films as well. So she's similar to me in the sense that she has different lanes that she's very proficient in. She wears many hats, and she doesn't seem to be the type of person to compromise. She knows what she wants. She has no problem going for it and getting respect as a result. You know, she's very beloved. A lot of actors love working with her. She has a good reputation in that sense of recognizing her team and valuing her team and telling the story the way it should be told. She's such a boss babe, and I love it. I just love her style. It makes me smile. It makes me smile, and I get so inspired.
And welcome to this roundtable after our conversation with Dania Denise. I'm Evita, as you know.
And I'm Lauren, as you hopefully know by now.
Yeah, you should know that by now. If you don't, like, I mean, you don't even need to introduce yourself. Like, they should just know it.
It's me.
So last week, we kind of ended our conversation on representation and love, where we talked, like, we kind of ended that on how we wanted to also see more, like, platonic love, and brotherly love, and, you know, just more wholesome love between men as well, as friends. But right after that, we went to watch The Banshees of Inisherin, or Inisherin. Not quite sure. I'm not Irish, and I'm not going to put on an accent because I think that would be even more offensive. It's a movie directed by Martin McDonagh, starring Colin Farrell as Podrig and Brendan Gleeson as Colm. And it was interesting because when we ended that, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I even like, I don't know if it's really the most appropriate movie to talk about. But the movie itself was incredibly relevant to what we just talked about. And felt like it had been born out of our last, like, 5 minutes. I know. It was like,
we just, like, knew. We were like,
oh, it'd be really nice to see this. And then, wow, there we go. Now it exists. We manifested this movie. In fact, nobody worked on it.
It was us. That's why we're talking about it in Women in Film, because we made it.
Exactly, exactly. Yes, yes, precisely.
There's that representation.
Don't look at IMDb. Yeah.
Manifested by Lauren Sabiel and Evita DeGlosan. The credits are there. They're there.
There you go. To give you a quick summary of the movie so you know what it's about. Basically, on a small Irish island. It takes place in 1923, but I think since it is a secluded island, it kind of looks like it takes place in 1911, you know? Anyway, so it takes place on this very secluded island, and it's about two lifelong friends where suddenly one of them, Colm, played by Brendan Gleeson, just ends their friendship out of seemingly no reason. Colin Farrell's character Podrick goes up to him, asks if he wants to go get their pint as they usually do, and he just says no, and they're not friends anymore, without an explanation, without a reason, without any beef, without anything seemingly happening between them, a rift or of any sort. And Colm's character then goes on, like, obviously, Colm Farrell's character is reasonably upset about this, and does everything he can to try and understand why this has happened, and how they can, you know, go back to being friends, and Brendan Gleeson's character is so determined to not be friends with him that he starts to threaten to cut off his fingers if he keeps talking to him. It is a gut-wrenching tragedy that is also really funny, and very emotional, and I think has this really intimate portrayal of platonic love between men that you just, I don't think I've ever seen something quite like it. I was just like, when the movie ended, I just kind of sat there, you know, it was like, what do I do now?
I have to agree with you there. It was like one moment it's just like the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life without it having to be like obnoxiously funny. And then I'm like, I was just, like, in shock, like, 50% of the time. I feel like I didn't understand, but it's, like, my heart knew. Like, I don't know. It was crazy. Just, like, the way that it was so beautiful.
It really was. I think because this is also a movie when neither of them have wives, and they are really, like, lifelong partners in a way. Like, they are soulmates, you know, and not like there aren't any, I don't To me, I didn't read any like romantic subtext to it either, which is also something I think a lot of people struggle to do when they do make like friendship movies about men.
It's just like
like I feel like they always like
force
that, I don't know, into... maybe struggle to like struggle to show platonic love, and the only love they know is romantic love, and then that subtext is there. But that wasn't here. It was just such a...
It really just was genuine love and friendship. Like, there wasn't... Really there aren't was. Any undertones, I mean, in there for you to even force. Like, this was just so well done that you would have to be, like, kind of insane to be like, oh, no, they were in love. Like, they're in love. Like, no, shut up. Sit down. No, they weren't.
And I think there was, you know... something so nice about seeing such a vulnerable, I don't want to say reliance, but a vulnerable, just, yeah, a vulnerability in your relationship with somebody else who's not, like, a romantic partner. I don't know, Colin Farrell had me in tears a couple times there.
Oh, yeah, God. He really put his whole Farrell-ussy into that, didn't he? Sorry. But I don't, like, and it was so interesting how well these two actors work together as well. Like, these two actors are also, like, friends in real life, which is, I think you can, they just have, like, excellent chemistry on screen. And I don't know if you guys have seen In Bruges, which it's pretty much like this movie, except they're not in Ireland, and they're hitmen, and not beefing, and there's slurs. But, like, quite a bit. But, like, it's just, it really just is Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, like, against the world, honestly, in those two movies. And I think that that's beautiful because, like, you can see a representation of that friendship in those both, in both of those films. And, like, I was actually gonna look into it, but I haven't seen, like, them really talking about that kind of dynamic that they both, like, clearly like to represent. But I guarantee you that, like, they both had a play in that character, in their character's dynamic, because, like, they just work so well. And it's just, it's too similar to In Bruges, I think. It's just,
I mean, it's directed,
it really just
by
is Colin Farrell, it's
also
the same guy.
So it's like, I feel like it is an unofficial sequel, you know, like,
yeah, exactly,
how you have those movies,
it's the afterlife,
how you have the movies that are just like parallel universes, different scenarios.
Oh, that's actually quite beautiful. I mean, I don't know. I definitely cried watching In Bruges. It was a really weird movie, but it was just like this. Like, this man just has that effect on you. Like, where you just sit there and you're just like, what? Like, you just don't understand it, but it's just incredible to watch. And I don't know, they just have that power. It's beautiful.
Romantic love is something that is so presented as something to desire and have in your life, and be like the ultimate sort of relationship you can have. And we are supposed to have friends, but when we're not friends anymore with people, you're not really supposed to admit that it hurts. I feel like there's always like, oh, we just grew apart, and there's not really that acknowledgement of a friend breakup. But this is such a friend breakup movie, and also shows really the feeling of like what happened, how, like, and like the sorrow and the grief that comes with that. But at the same time, it's so funny, and I just,
it's not making fun of them,
it's just like a very peculiar and bizarre situation.
Yeah, exactly. It's just also like their characters, like, I mean, Colin Farrell's character, I've heard her say like Parig, but she says it like Parig. It might just be like Irish people.
I think it's spelled like
Patrick.
But I think Parig. Parig.
Parig. Parig.
Yeah, D is silent, so Parig. My apologies.
Gotcha. Parig.
My apologies. No, sorry.
Yeah, but like Parig has this like really interesting like relationship with a miniature donkey. That Christ, the way it just had me, like,
and that's,
oh God, it was, I just feel like in a lot of these films, like, these they're just depicted as like, oh, I'm just gonna cry in like a wool sweater in silence and never acknowledge grief. But I feel like it was so beautiful that like they not only like depicted a healthy relationship between men, but they also like depicted healthy masculinity. Truly. I think like they were just not afraid to do that. And I think especially with like Parik, I mean, he had such a wonderful relationship with that miniature donkey, and he loved that miniature donkey and he treasured it, and he didn't just treat it like some farm animal, you know. And it was just, you really saw like, not just, it wasn't just like his soft side. I mean, he talks about, I think, being like the nicest in a Sharon, or, and he, you know, he really is, like, they really just made a wonderful man. And he, that's just the way he was.
So highly recommend people go watch this. Again, I will say that I thought it was quite disappointing to see that there weren't a lot of women working behind the scenes, like at all, at least in leadership roles. Like out of the 10 producers, only one is a woman, and that would be Jo Homewood. Again, it's written and directed by Martin McDonagh, and all the music, film editing, production design is also led by men, which is kind of classic and a bit disappointing, especially when you do have a movie that is so heavily focused and, well, basically just stars men. It'd be nice to kind of have that evened out, at least behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But hopefully, you know, things will be better. I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out more about the Irish film industry and what it's like there in terms of gender equality in the industry. So yeah, I do want to say that, because I did find that, like, when the credits then came rolling, I was like, oh, damn, come on. Like, come on.
Where just are all
make
the
make a
women?
Little bit of effort. So that's definitely somewhere I think they could have improved. But yeah. Anyway, so The Banshees of Inisherin, or Inisherin, or something completely different, was a very wonderful movie that is absolutely hilarious. You will cry and weep and laugh, and your stomach will hurt for various reasons. What else has Lauren been watching?
I will proudly announce that I have been watching two things that I've been re-watching. One I haven't seen in a long time. One, I just recently re-watched it again, but this is the only new thing I've seen, I think. I just, you know, I think most of, like, what has Lauren been watching in this, like, roundtable has just been me, like, oh, I just rewatched like this. Dairy Girls. So if you want to talk about Irish film filled with women, I can definitely tell you that Dairy Girls is an excellent choice. You can find it on Netflix. And Channel 4. I don't think that the new season is out on Netflix.
I think it is on Channel 4. I think you should be able to watch it there. Let me double check. And I believe Channel 4 is also free to stream. Yes, free of charge, and it is on Channel 4. So go watch it. It is a fucking phenomenal show about a group of Northern Irish gals in the 90s. And it's just perfect. It really
It has no flaws at all. None. It has representation. Maybe not exactly like people of color as much, but they are in Northern Ireland, I guess you could say. But it, you know, when it comes to LGBT, we do have a queer character and everything. And it's just like, it's absolutely it's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Ever.
Yes.
Like, I will swear upon my, like, grave, it is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. But it also has, it just touches on, like, a political undertones, because obviously, like, it takes place, like, during the Troubles in Northern Ireland and everything, so it's also, it also just kind of shows, like, how these are normal girls and how their lives are still, like, affected every day by this kind of situation. And then, oh, it just shows, like, wonderful relationships between girls, and as well as their one guy friend,
yeah,
James, who
yeah.
is also very healthy.
Exactly, yes, another, like,
character.
Just, yeah, very refreshing characters all around. all the girls are so different, and there's not shame in it, and just very different personalities and focuses and views on the world. And I think, you know, it's rare to see something that takes place like right in the middle of a war, essentially, but then showing like the actual lives of people who aren't like literally in the trenches,
involved,
you know,
exactly.
But and how it affects them, but also how it doesn't, and how they persevere. Some of the most like impactful scenes, I think, is the contrast between what the girls are going through and
what
is happening,
like,
in the world, what the parents are watching on the TV.
Exactly.
You know, when they're dancing on stage at school and a bomb has just gone off, or when they are heartbroken over a boy and finally fire is beginning to cease, and but they're heartbroken, and that doesn't, yeah, showing the actual human experience in that moment,
in relationship and, with conflict,
yeah,
like that,
yeah, and
it's so it's so strange, because like you said, like, you usually show, like, when it comes to like movies with like war like that, you'll see like absolute insane human suffering depicted in movies, or it's like at the beginning of the conflict, or it's like once it's the like once the aftermath is over, like it just kind of shows like the effect of the war after it's all over. But I feel like this one was really refreshing because of that reason. It showed that like relationship between like your normal life and this conflict that like obviously like isn't your fault, you're not involved in, but it's just there and it's affecting your everyday life, but you're trying to live your normal
exactly.
life.
And also sometimes, you know, even if the environment around you is horrid, you can still find tremendous joy, and even if it then is lessening and you're supposed to be celebrating that, you can still be heartbroken, you can still like go through emotional turbulence, personal turbulence, and yeah, it's just a fantastic show, created by Lisa McGee. It is the most successful comedy on Channel 4 since Father Ted, which, if any British person is listening, will know is a huge deal. And yeah, also like something about the way the conflict presents in their life, like obviously, what boy band is it?
Oh, Take That or
yeah,
something.
Yeah,
or
like when
this and
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think one of the like funniest things is like when Take That finally announces that they're coming to Northern Ireland, and they're like, oh my god, somebody's actually coming over here, and like one of the issues of the conflict is the fact that no big concerts have been happening because nobody wants to go to Northern Ireland.
To Northern Ireland.
You know? And I just think that's, like, of course, that's something that would impact you. That's something that would matter. That's something that would then be, like, a huge, like, oh my god, we need to go and do this, because...
Yeah, because it's kind of like a once-in-a-lifetime thing if you're, like, 16 years old.
Yeah, so, anyway, go watch Dairy Girls.
100%.
It's phenomenal. Yeah, I just... Oh, God, just watch it. I feel like I watched one episode when I was over at a friend's, and I went home and I watched all three episodes in one weekend, all three seasons in one weekend. Like, that's just the perfect has on you.
That's the effect that it will have on you.
Yeah, and I think it's also, like, such a successful political comedy as well, which is so... a lot of people just struggle with and make it really forced, and I think it could have gone down that direction, but it doesn't. It's just so humane. And also for teen girls, it's just like,
watch it.
I'm a big fan. Yes. yes. What else?
As Evita obviously knows, I recently forced her. I sat her down at my home and forced her to watch Teen Wolf with me. The show. And it was basically, I just want to say like a couple things about Teen Wolf. I think that it could have been better, like, and I know we can say that about literally anything else, but I think I think it was going like in the right direction, maybe. I think like Twilight aesthetically is quite nice. But I think that the issue with Twilight is obviously just like how weird it is, you know? And I think that maybe if they kind of...
How predatory it is.
Yeah, how predatory it is, exactly. And I think that like maybe if they had a baby that was a little better at writing like scripts and stuff, or like literally anything. I don't know how to describe it. I just think it could have been better.
Wait, a baby?
Like if they had a baby, like the movies that was really good at writing.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Like you mean like if Teen Wolf had like a baby in the writer's room? No, like, what are you talking about?
No. But like, I think the perfect way that you described it was that it was like too skateboard. It was too like Disney XD. And it is. It totally is. Because they're like werewolves, but it's like, it's like so chaotic, and you're just
I think it's just like so because it happened like at the time where the Vampire Diaries was really big, and I think the Vampire Diaries was in a very traditional sense for girls, and then Teen Wolf was like, we'll also let you have something supernatural. You know, and like it was okay because like the main characters are guys. But, like, all other... I don't know. I was going to bring up Supernatural, but it's a bit more complicated, I think.
Yeah.
It's a rabbit hole.
I think,
just watching it, I was like, yeah, like, guys could watch this and it would be okay, you know, for a teenage boy to watch Teen Wolf. But if he watched The Vampire Diaries, he probably wouldn't talk about it at this time where it came out.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. But I think my favorite thing about the show that I think it could have like really worked on was like the mythology. I think that they had like, they took like bits and pieces of so many myths and everything, and they were like, oh yeah, it's all going to be like in Beacon Hills, which is the town they all live in, which is like a magnet for like supernatural shit or whatever. And they're just all going to be here, and it's going to be this like hub of like supernatural creatures. Like there's like a gazillion supernatural creatures like everywhere. There's like a were panther, I think. There's like, yeah, like there's a bunch of weird stuff going on. And I think that if they really just kind of focused on like a specific aspect of those myths and how it applied to it, if they just did like world building, and if they just spent a little more time on that, I think that it would have been a little better. And then if it was a little XD, I think it would have also been better, because like there's this one part where Tyler Posey, whose character is named Scott McCall, he's like about to make out with this other character. And it starts playing like Real People Do by Hozier. And that's when we were like, like, that was so out of theme.
It's
like, Hozier in Twilight would make sense, which is, I'm sorry, you know, but it would. But then, like, you're playing, like, one of, like, the most, like, soft Irish, like, singers in the universe. Like, speaking of Irish people, this man is an artist.
They're playing fairy music when they should be playing ogre music, you know?
Yeah, like it was just so strange. And I think like maybe if the aesthetic was different, like because of the mythology and because of everything else, like they still could have made it the way that it is. I think they just needed to, I think if it was just like Twilight, but if it took itself a little less seriously, I think it should have been fine.
Yeah, I think if they did that now, that's probably the direction they went in. But I'm like, just based on the TV landscape at the time, I'm pretty sure like they probably did pitch it like, this is our target audience are young boys, like it, or
yeah,
like we
a,
want
it's
to
a teen
create
werewolf
something
that rides motorcycles
to them. Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and so
like in the intro,
you don't want
there's like
fairies,
like,
and you know,
yeah,
vibes there.
Like,
it has to be hardcore.
Exactly. It has to be like, ah, we're a werewolf and I'm a teenager and I've got like hormones and I love women. And it's like, because like in the intro, there's a bunch of like weird random bits where you see like a naked woman, and she's not it's not a character that's naked. It's just a naked woman. It's just like you've got Tyler Posey, like, okay, red eyes, I'm a werewolf, I'm levitating for some unimaginable reason. You've got Styles in the Jeep and whatever. You've got, like, every character showing, like, the aspect to show, like, what they are. Like, it's like, okay, unless you, you know, didn't understand by the title of this, these are teen wolves or teen creatures. And then, like, there's, I think in, like, the first couple of seasons, there's, like, a woman covered in, like, black paint and she just like scratches her torso, but she's naked. And then like in the later seasons in the intro, I think they get rid of that, but then you just see like a woman laying down, and it kind of gets like it's just her bare like back, like shoulder blades back, and then you can see a bit of her butt because you can see like butt crack. So it's it's there a lot randomly.
It's just in the episodes you forced me to watch.
Yeah.
Just a lot of.
I'm sorry.
Okay, I know the audience that they're playing to, you know.
Yeah, and it was just like. It wasn't like a specific character. It's not just like, oh, this character's like really naked all the time. That's their superpower. It's just like. This isn't something that would be advertised to a girl, really. Like, back then at least. It's like, oh yeah, I want to see like. A naked girl just kind of, you know what it gives, you know, like in James Bond, like the intros and stuff like that, there's just like women dancing.
Yeah,
like that, like that's what that gives. And that was so weird to watch because it's like sometimes like the credits would be like a gazillion years, but they would be like at the beginning of the movie and there's just like women like sensually dancing and you're just like, what is happening? And that's basically what that was. It was so weird.
Yeah,
the allure. James Bond likes women. Scott McCall likes women. Like, it was just, but it's a fun show. Like, it's fun to watch. Like, you're like, this is fun because it's like you're fun, you're having fun judging it and being mean, but then it's also like, haha, you know. It's just sometimes like it's really cringy. Like, I don't know if you've seen like clips of them like as a human but with like the wolf transformation face, they're running like on all fours. Have you seen clips of that? Hang on, I know.
Oh, please show this to me.
I think
you can screen share.
I'm literally going to. That, I think, like, I don't know if you guys remember, like, those videos of, like, The Flash running and they're, like, jogging really weird. That's kind of what, or, like, Twilight running. That's kind of what that is. Because it's sped up because since their wolves are so fast. Had to like train him for that. Like, do you think he spent like weeks?
It must be difficult
weeks, like,
to do that. Like, how do
you like
even,
that?
I could never do that.
Christ. It must be painful.
Oh
my god! Yeah,
oh
that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Humiliating must that be to film? Like, I cannot think of a single thing more humiliating to do. Like. With so many people filming you as well, like a whole crew around you, and you have to run on all fours.
Scott runs to Allison. Oh my god. Because I don't think he ever does that again, actually. Like, ever.
Oh, what an incredible video. All right. Great. Okay, we've been talking for a long ass time now, but I do want to quickly shout out a show I've been watching. Inside Job on Netflix is, I've just been watching the second season because my partner and we watched the first season last year when it came out and absolutely loved it. It's like an animated comedy about a scientist and her colleagues as they run the shadow government and hide conspiracies. So like every single conspiracy theory, they're supposedly real and it's the shadow government covering them up. And it's so funny and very political, extremely relevant. And I think the first season, the concept is so good. Also the intro, ooh, God, amazing. But I do think the first season, they had more of a general concept that was funny, and some of the jokes did seem a little bit forced, and like they didn't quite come out the right way. But then in the second season here, which I'm so happy that they got, I think they've really found the flow, and like everything just had me like crying on the floor. And like, oh my god, it's so amazing as well, because it came out like a couple weeks ago, and the way... Like, they mentioned stuff about Elon Musk, stuff about Kanye West, that you would think they had written last week.
But this is, like, I mean, obviously...
And it's... Yeah, but obviously they made it, they've made it in the past year, and it's just... unbelievable. It's... I would just really recommend it for people who, like... I don't know. I don't know. I wouldn't say that you have to like animation to like it either. I'm not super big on animated comedies, never have been, but this one just has an edge to it, and is just, yeah, it's really well made, and just some really great people working on it, funny animations, killer intro music, which you don't see very often, and very just on point jokes that you're like, how the fuck did they write this a year ago? Because it is somehow even more relevant than it was then. It's a conspiracy of its own. Like, it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's on Netflix for anybody who wants to watch that. And yeah, that is our roundtable for this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Making It Women in Film, a podcast produced by Bonnie and Brawl and LS Films. If you want to support this podcast, you can do so by subscribing to us wherever you're listening and leave a review or a rating. It'll only take you a few clicks, but it'll mean the world to us. You can also check out our website, womeninfilm.co.uk, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at makingwomeninfilm, and feel free to shoot us an email at makingwomeninfilm@gmail.com if you have any questions or inquiries or anything at all, and we'll try to get back to you. Alright, guess I'll just see you next week. Bye.